You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Oh, I'm a good old rebel, now that's just what I am. For this fair land of freedom, I do not care a damn. I'm glad I fit against it, I only wish we'd won. And I don't want no pardon for anything I've done. I hate the Constitution, this great republic too. I hate the Freedmen's Bureau in uniforms of blue. I hate the nasty eagle with all his brags and fuss. The lying, thieving Yankees, I hate some worse and worse.
Confederate History Month rolls on. Not only does it roll on this evening, Saturday, April 20th, year of our Lord, 2024, we are putting the pedal to the metal. We have only four Saturdays in Confederate History Month this year, and we are going full bore.
We're going to max them out.
Three guests last week, three guests tonight. Last week, Michael Hill, John Hill, Kirk Lyons. Tonight, you've already heard from Patrick Martin and Gene Andrews talking about Nathan Bedford Forrest. Now we go to Brad Griffin, the mind behind OccidentalDescent.com, a daily read if I go to one website every day.
The mouth of the South.
Before my very own, I go to OccidentalDescent.com. He's the founder and editor-in-chief, and he's going to be offering his on-air review of the new Civil War movie that is in theaters now. But first, let's say hello. Brad, I got to thank you, my friend, not only for coming back with us again tonight, but for making time for us this evening at a time when you had a slight family conflict as well. How are you?
Oh, doing good, James. Thanks for having me. Yeah, we had a banquet for my son tonight.
How'd it go?
School related. Oh, good. Got to meet some local business leaders and stuff. It was interesting.
There you go. Well, that's where you should be. That's the company.
What grade is he in, or is she in?
Jordy.
Oh, Jordy? Yeah. Oh, he's in fourth grade.
Okay.
Wow, time goes by. The Righteous Brothers say time goes by so slowly. They were wrong about that. It goes by too fast. Well, Brad's also got another bun in the oven.
Well, you know that. Also, I am now a grandfather for the first time.
Just, there you go.
Grandson named Dean. Yeah. Grandson named Dean, D-E-A-N, good Southern name.
Oh, that's a good one.
All right. Well, let's talk about this, Brad. Now, I told Keith earlier tonight, don't be disappointed, Keith, the movie hasn't come out on VHS yet, but
I'm not waiting with bated breath, let me say that.
But Brad went to see it, so I said, by God, if we're going to have Brad on during Confederate History Month to talk about the new movie called Civil War, I got to go see it too. So I took my wife to see it on Wednesday, and I'm going to my takeaways weren't...
Did you demand your money back?
Too indifferent from yours, Brad. But I'll read my takeaways, then we'll get into yours, then we'll hash it out together.
Okay,
so,
great.
Here's... first of all, when I saw the previews to the film, I actually got a little bit excited, not reading more into it than what I saw. I was thinking, well, we haven't had a good president since Davis. I mean, maybe since, you know, James K. Polk, if you're talking about a United States president, and then Davis. I mean, Andrew Johnson, you know, we're thankful for what he did. But you got to go back a long time. So I'm saying a movie about a civil war where they're encroaching upon Washington, that sounds good to me. And then I read further into it, and it was a totally different type of thing. So the movie starts off in New York. You got this crew of righteous journalists attempting to travel 800 miles down to D.C. to get an interview with a president who is obviously a stand-in for Donald Trump before he loses the war. And in case there was any confusion, you know the journalists are the good guys because the journalist Lee Smith, who's played by Kristen Dunst, She shares the same name as the journalist who photographed a Dachau. So you know she's the good guy. There's no doubt about that. They established that very early. Now, this movie progresses incrementally with the heroic band of journalists getting ever closer to D.C. with random encounters along the way. And
with toothless rednecks.
Well, that's part of it. There's no real war scenes. There's no sweeping war scenes. You see sort of urban guerrilla fighting. You see an untouched town with snipers on the roof. All the while, these journalists are getting closer to D.C. And as they travel, the details become revealed. You have a president in his third term. He's violated the Constitution, and we know how much leftists adhere to the Constitution. They would never violate it.
It's sacred to them.
That's right. You've got the president disbanded the FBI. We learned that. He used military on civilian targets, even though that's what Biden has
actually.
Another
good idea.
Biden has actually threatened that. They go to a stadium, and there was an Antifa massacre. We can only imagine that the Trump forces beat down Antifa. And anyway. I think, Brad, the most interesting scenes to me were the scenes featuring Jesse Plemons. Now, he is a great actor. I've known him since the Breaking Bad TV show, and everything he's in is great. He was in The Killers of the Flower Moon, Robert De Niro, Leonardo DiCaprio. Great actor. Interestingly, he's married to Kristen Dunst, but in this, he plays like a partisan, I guess, and he's sort of on the pro-Trump side, and he's assassinating journalists, and, you know, we'd hate to see that happen. But,
it breaks my heart.
But the Charlottesville is mentioned two or three times. Charlottesville is the front lines of the war. That's where... That's where it's all staging.
The Fort Sumter.
They're on the march to Washington. This Trump-like character is about to be toppled in Charlottesville. You know, I wonder if they chose that just out of the hat or if there was a reason. But anyway, finally, our heroes get to D.C. In time to see the White House breached. They are embedded with a unit of the so-called Western Forces troops that is led by a sassy-talking black woman they find Trump hiding behind a desk, underneath a desk. Trump says, please, or the Trump-like president says, please don't let them kill me. And then the black woman gives him two shots to the chest. The movie ends, credits roll with the soldiers and journalists smiling in a picture above the corpse of the president. Brad.
Oh, boy, I can hardly wait.
Brad, take it from there, my friend.
Oh, yeah, you pretty much nailed it. There's, I mean... There's a lot. It's kind of intentionally left out. Like you don't ever hear what the war is really about. You don't hear the name of the president, but there's enough there that you can, you know, it's implicit, like what's going on, right?
Read between the lines.
Right. The tyrannical act of the authoritarian fascist president was that he disbanded the FBI, which is, you know, the federal secret police, right? That was the action of the dictator that caused the rebellion of the Western forces or something like that. So, I mean, it's obvious what's going on. You know, this is, you know, just after I saw Alex Jones's review of it yesterday. It's really like a fantasy, like, you know, of New York based journalists. You know, the whole movie is not so much about the war. It's about them and their experiences, how, I can't believe it happened here. And then the movie culminates with, you know, the angry black woman shooting the president dead and all the journalists smiling and, like, taking photos with his dead body. Right. So, I mean, that's where all this was going the whole time. And interspersed, but, you know, there's one scene, like, when they first come out of New York and they meet the rednecks who are torturing the looter is like something out of Deliverance. And then of course they got, then of course they've got like people who are shooting other people who they have no idea who's fighting. And then of course there's the mass grave scene and the noble black journalist who sacrifices his life to save the other journalists. So, I mean,
I've got a great idea for it.
Are you ready for this one, Keith?
Yeah.
Okay.
You want to go see it?
No. here's what I want to do. I want to make a remake of it. And, you know, we have Congressman Hank Johnson, a black congressman from Georgia, who said that Guam might sink or capsize if they had too many people on. In other words, it's floating. Well, We're going to imagine that to be true, and I'm hoping that they're going to basically cause Manhattan Island to float out to the sea.
Well, you know, the only reason Hank Johnson's even in is because he took over for Cynthia McKinney, who was saying some things that the Jews didn't like. And anyway, we digress. But Brad, all right, so let's talk about this. This is a point that you made up, that you pointed out, I should say, in your movie review at OccidentalDescent.com. In what world, or even in what futuristic, hypothetical fantasy timeline, does California and Texas join forces? They are the Western forces, and they are apparently the only two involved in this, because you see a flag. It looks like the American flag, but it only has two stars in this movie that represents California and Texas, and they're fighting together to topple the fascist government led by the Trump stand-in.
That's a liberal dream.
Well, but how would that ever work out?
One thing that it just made no sense to me is we're told that they've seceded from the Union and they're allied, but they're also like marching on Washington, and you know the Western forces are in Charlottesville about to topple the whole government. So like, is this a rebellion or a secession or? It's not exactly clear, but it's just the thing made no sense. I mean, of course, there's no timeline where any of this made any sense. I guess they thought California couldn't do it by itself.
Their army would have stopped to have sex with barnyard animals on the way to Washington.
But the idea that Texas and California would be aligned, why not Texas and Washington State or, you know, California and, California and Oregon, or rather, but interestingly, because this movie has actually done well at the box office. Most movies post COVID, you know, just don't make
everyone
the money
went
back
to see it. Apparently,
well, I think it's people like me and you who are oddly curious about it. Yeah. But I think Trump should make this a talking point in his campaign. I really do, because obviously this guy is a stand-in for Trump, and you've got
they're proposing he be killed and shot down.
The Antifa warriors and the righteous journalists trying to find him and they even say in the movie, this is a kill, not capture. You know, wherever you find him, leave him. They say that right before they breach the White House, they are going in there to murder him, not to negotiate a surrender or anything else. They try to do that. I think it would be a good talking point for Trump to say, hey, the other side has already made the movie of what they would like to see happen.
Yeah, that's what Alex
Jones
is saying.
Tell me about that. I haven't seen Alex's Jones review.
Yeah, I saw Alex's take, and he was like, oh, they're obviously, you know, this is the script. They're pre-programming, like, what they do. Like, you know, Trump gets elected, and there's going to be, like, they're going to try to spark some kind of military rebellion against them. And then this is the whole fantasy that ends with, you know, a black woman killing Trump while, like, journalists are all around, like, taking pictures of it. And he was like, this is the new anti-white America. And it's great. And that's what the movie's about, which I can see that. I can definitely see them going there.
Oh yeah, well,
that's
this
one scenario
is their
we
fantasy.
Were so afraid
that
of last
was surely,
year.
It is absolutely their fantasy to kill all of us. I mean, you know, certainly. I mean, not just Trump thinking people, but people, you know, to the right of Trump who see things even more clearly than he does. But this thing,
we've got the new Toussaint Louverture of the United States putting to death all the whites and mulattoes left in America so that we can have a black republic like Haiti.
Once you made it to the end of the movie, Brad, if you don't mind me asking, and you can share as much or as little as you'd like in response to this question, when you saw Kristen Dunst's righteous character fall.
Is that D-U-N-C-E?
I guess we should have said before this hour began, warning, spoiler alert. But anyway, if you haven't seen the movie and you wanted to, I guess we've ruined it by now. But anyway, when you saw her, or is it Kirsten? I think it's actually Kirsten Dunst.
Kirsten Dunst.
When you saw her fall there in the White House, what was your reaction?
I was like, thank God, let's get out of here.
I thought you'd be crying like a baby.
But, you know, she fell, and the movie made a point to really emphasize this cinematically speaking.
Did violins start playing?
No. Her body fell, but this androgynous reporter who was like her protege rose up. Did you notice that, Brad?
Oh yeah. At first she was going to take the, I think if I remember correctly, at first she was going to take the picture of the protege getting killed, but then she like rushed in there and nobly sacrificed herself.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. And then the protege rose up, you know, in her, stead.
It
took pictures of her. Yeah. Yeah. That's the point.
Getting killed. Right.
Exactly. That's the point that's made, you know, during the movie.
What scumbag people, like, you just watch people get shot and killed and, like, you're just, like, snapping, like, photos of it.
Well, journalists, obviously, because you saw it even in the movie. Even in their movie,
yeah,
that's how they
true to life in that respect.
Sit themselves. But let's see. Okay, what else about this movie before we move on to broader topics? I guess... Jesse Plemons, I got to say this. Again, he's married to Kirsten Dunst. Yeah, I thought it was the best. It was the most, to me, the most interesting 5 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, that and I kind of like the action scene, like at the end when they're like storming DC. And I mean, you can use your imagination, imagine like if the roles were reversed and like it was actually a good story. That's what I was trying to do.
this is their imaginary take on what happened on January the 6th. This is a storming of DC, right?
Well, except they're doing it for righteous reasons and they get the.
Oh, yeah. It's totally righteous, like leftist, you know, retaking the White House from the fascist enemy, Trump. We thought it was.
And again, you know, and this one Hispanic reporter, he's trying to get there to Washington. They know that the battle's lost for the fascists, and he's trying to get there so he can interview this Trump stand-in before his demise. And then they finally find Trump, and he crawls out from under the desk. He's hiding, you know, obviously like a coward.
And the Hispanic journalist asked him, like, for a quote, and he was like, please don't kill me. And he's like, that'll do. Then they shoot him, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you just see, you know, all the projection in that scene. We're motivated by hate. We're not motivated for love of family, love of our way of life, love of our culture, nothing good or wholesome or eternal. We're motivated entirely by hatred. But then you see exactly where they're motivated at because they smile as they're able to assassinate him.
Yeah, they're having a good time. It's
telling.
Like a triumph, and I guess, you know, like Alex said, they're kind of like, I mean, we've talked about this several times on Cesspool before about like what would happen in the event that, you know, Trump did win. Like, how would they take that? This could be like pointing in that direction.
The fact that they even see Trump as literal Hitler, and you know, it's his birthday today, by the way, but the fact that they see him as all of that, and it goes to show how deranged they are, because he's really not any of that. He's not our guy. I say this often. He's not our guy. He's not our guy. But the fact that they see him as this avatar of fascism and Nazism and all of this is,
well,
fantastical.
You know. Now that you mention that, it kind of dawns on me that like this kind of actually did happen before. You remember the time during the Floyd riots that the White House was under siege and everything was on fire,
yes,
and there was a mob.
Yes.
And Trump was down in the basement of the White House, like
character in this movie,
tweeting in all caps, "Law and order." like he's the authoritarian. You know, meanwhile, like, you know, he's the one who's under siege, right?
Well, you saw those aerial photos, Brad, of what you're talking about, and it was fires ablaze all around the White House, just like in this movie.
See, that was so much worse than January the 6th, but you never hear anything about that episode. Before.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I mean, that was totally swept under the rug. Because far more damage on that day than they did on January 6th.
Far more violence. Far,
absolutely.
Far more destruction of property.
Absolutely. All right, one more thing, and then we're going to transition into some other wider issues in the last half of this hour. But this movie was apparently based off of a book by a so-called journalist named Barbara Walter. Now, don't be confused with Barbara Walters.
Yeah. That was my. That's what I suspected. I don't know if it officially was, but I mean, I saw that woman 1,000 times on – she would always come on MSNBC, CNN, talk about how civil wars happened and da-da-da-da-da. And that,
remember her mush mouth.
No, no, it's not Barbara Walters. It's okay. Barbara Walter without the S. Well, yeah, she wrote a book. What's the name of the book?
How Civil War Started or something. But, yeah, I mean, she looks like Lee Smith, the Kirsten Dunst character.
Yes.
And then that's what I kept thinking, like, the whole movie. Is like they just made a movie out of those CNN segments.
I thought it was a fact. I took it as fact. That's the only thing. I didn't even think that was just conjecture. I thought that was...
That is my conjecture.
Was it not, after her book? Well, anyway, that surprises me. Well, yeah. Well, so, but yes, the book and all of her appearances basically are the movie.
It actually they had like flashbacks of her being in like other war zones in other countries. So that's what made me, think
the new Ernie Pyle.
Definitely inspired by that book or a reading of it. Combined with a leftist fantasy of just killing Trump.
Well, how could they see him as what they see him as? That's the thing. He did. We've actually progressed. So I was talking about this with Patrick Martin earlier in the program tonight. We've progressed so much more as a movement since 2020 or since January of 2021 specifically, to get technical, than we ever did under Trump. It might behoove us better that Trump loses and the left enacts its last full measure to stack the Supreme Court and run the whole thing into the ditch once and for all than for Trump win and for us to pretend the system works for four more years.
The most heartening thing I'd heard recently, Brad, is that the Chinese are planning to take over Hollywood. That would be one of the best things ever. You know, the Chinese, it would have to be more righteous than the bills that's being churned out by Jewish Hollywood now.
I actually heard that tonight, but that's another story I'll have to tell you.
All right, we'll get to that. But this whole idea, I mean, how can they really see Trump as they pretend to see him to be rather than what he really is, which, I mean, he's okay. I mean, president would have ever said anything favorable about Robert E. Lee. He did that, but that, you know, and I'm thankful for that. But, you know, in terms of policy and turning the tide, not much.
Yeah, I mean, he's the one who's being, I mean, you know, the fascist dictator is the one who's being put on trial, like, in four separate jurisdictions, right?
Well, we got to get to that after the break. We're going to take the bottom of the hour break. We skipped the floater break for you, Brad. But, yeah, we got to get to that because, I mean, Trump was, his goose was cooked. He was done. I mean, yes, you have a historically weak president in Biden. I mean, obviously, he's beyond.
He's just a figurehead. The real president is like the Wizard of Oz behind the screen somewhere.
That's right. Yeah. And then you have historically bad economy with this rampant inflation, and that has given Trump a second life. And then you add into this rampant and naked abuse of power in Fulton County, Georgia, and in New York and in D.C. I mean, this whole thing, you've written about it, Brad. They brought him back to life. He was done.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, completely. I mean, his political recovery began the day that Alvin Bragg is indicted him and he was arrested. I think it was exactly a year ago. Was it exactly a year ago today?
Right about.
Appropriately named villain, Alvin Bragg. You know, it's like
it was in April.
Benjamin Jealous back in the days of the NAACP.
I believe it was in April. I'm pretty sure of that. So.
Well, yeah, but they, all of this wanton, and again, so much is projection. What's totalitarianism? What's authoritarianism? It's what they're doing. This is them. And listen, I'm not opposed to that. I we need a strong man to clean this up. It's like I said last week. It's going to take a lot more than soap and water to clean up this mess. I'm not opposed to a strong man. We need that. But everything they claim to be opposed to, it's exactly what they're doing. And they brought Trump back to life. It's given him life with the independent voters. You know, because all. A lot of people outside of the Acela corridor see this for what it is, and it is just rampant political corruption. All of these trials. All right, we'll get with that. We'll get to Brad about that when we come back. That'll just wrap up our review of Civil War. Go see it if you want to see it. Keith, we'll get it to you when it comes out on 8-track.
You shouldn't have.
Pretty. protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Tim Berg. House Speaker Mike Johnson is pushing ahead on several bills to aid U.S. allies with a separate bill for the border. The move is angering some conservatives who want to oust him over the move. They argue the border should be tied to Ukraine to force Democrats to vote for its passage. More anti-Israel protests are taking place at New York's Columbia University. Thursday, the NYPD confirmed that 114 arrests were made after the school called police. Former President Donald Trump is not happy about the gag order a judge in his hush money case imposed on him. It bars him from talking about witnesses, jurors, prosecutors, staff, court staff, and their family members. Trump saying on Friday it's his constitutional right to speak and noted others involved in the case are allowed to speak, including star witness Michael Cohen. To which former federal prosecutor Andy McCarthy tells Fox News the former president does have a point.
He's barred from speaking about people who spend basically 24/7 speaking about him.
Israel says it launched a limited strike at several sites in Iran late Thursday night. U.S. officials confirming Israel struck a number of locations inside Iran with no word yet on whether there were any casualties. Several explosions were reported near an airbase of an Iranian city, home to a number of sites linked to Iran's nuclear program. Disaster was narrowly averted at Washington Reagan National Airport on Thursday as air traffic controllers managed to keep a Southwest Airlines plane from colliding with the departing JetBlue plane.
Southwest 2937, stop.
We stopped. We were cleared to cross runway 4.
The FAA is investigating the incident. The JetBlue plane was heading to Boston while the Southwest plane was heading to Orlando. This is USA News.
The inventor and CEO of MyPillow is always looking for ways to solve everyday problems. Have you ever picked up a towel set because it felt really soft in the store, but then when you go to use it, it's not very absorbent? It's basically a towel that's leaving you out to dry. That's why MyPillow has developed the MyPillow towels. Towels that work. I know, it's mind-blowing. Towels that actually dry you. The six-piece towel set includes two bath towels, two hand towels, and two washcloths. They come in a variety of colors, and right now you can receive a six-piece set for only $39.98 with promo code USA. Go to MyPillow.com right now and click on the radio listener special. MyPillow products come with a 10-year warranty and they have a 60-day money-back guarantee. To receive this amazing offer on the six-piece set of MyPillow towels, just go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener special, and enter promo code USA or call 800-951-8175. That's MyPillow.com, promo code USA.
Hey there, TPC family. This is James Edwards, your host of The Political Cesspool. Folks, I want you to subscribe to the American Free Press, America's last real newspaper. Against all odds, AFP has and continues to publish a populist, independent print newspaper with an unparalleled track record. Founded by a dedicated group of experienced patriots, AFP pulls no punches and tackles the most controversial and pressing issues facing America from an America First perspective. I've worked with the American Free Press since even before the beginning of TPC. Now that's something. You can subscribe to the print edition by visiting AmericanFreePress.net today or simply pick up a handy digital edition subscription. However you do it, subscribe to the American Free Press, America's last real newspaper, by visiting AmericanFreePress.net or by calling 1-888-699-NEWS, AmericanFreePress.net. Hello, TPC family. It's James, and I've got to tell you that I sleep better at night knowing that there are organizations like the Conservative Citizens Foundation. The purpose of the Conservative Citizens Foundation is to promote the principles of limited government, individual liberty, equality before the law, property rights, law and order, judicial restraint, and states' rights, while at the same time exploring the dangers posed by liberalism to our national interests and cultural institutions. The Conservative Citizens Foundation also seeks to educate
educate the public on the dangers of extremist ideologies like critical race theory and cultural Marxism. I've worked with the good people at the Conservative Citizens Foundation for many years, and their work comes with my complete endorsement. For more information and to keep up with all the latest conservative news headlines, please check out their website, AmericaFirst.com. That's MERICA1ST.com. AmericaFirst.com.
There's a yellow rose in Texas that I am gonna see. Nobody else could miss her, not half as much as me. She cried so when I left her, it like to broke my heart. And if I ever find her, we never more will part. She's the sweetest little rosebud that Texas ever knew. Her eyes are bright as diamonds, they sparkle like the dew.
Well, that's the Yellow Rose of Texas. Keith, rolling back the clock to 1955 tonight. That's a Columbia record production from the album The Confederacy, Mitch Miller and his orchestra. I guess it was good enough for Columbia Records in 55, about nearly 100 years after the war, but we've learned more since then, have we not, Keith?
I tell you what, the left has taken over.
for now.
It's not been a pretty sight.
For now. All right.
The last chapter of this book has not been written, as they say.
That's exactly right. And I believe that. All right. Back with Brad Griffin, first half of this hour, we have talked with the proprietor of OccidentalDescent.com about the movie Civil War. It'd be the first one we've ever had on this continent. We've had two wars of independence, but maybe there'll be a civil war one day. Anyway. In the meantime, Brad, we talked about this last week. So last week we had Michael Hill on and others, and we talked about your observation there at OccidentalDescent.com. You're always watching the polls. 1 in 5 Americans think violence may solve U.S. divisions. So here we are now. This movie's out. We've talked over the last 2 years. I've given speeches about it. Talking about the different polls and the different news articles, and whether it be Oregon or Texas or New Hampshire or wherever, there is a fever that is growing for secession, even without all of the fire breathers prior to 1861. There still seems to be this innate sense of that something's wrong and we've got to do something else. There's got to be another option. What did you make of this new poll? This is a PBS NewsHour Marist NPR poll. 20% of Americans think it's going to end violently. That's pretty substantial. Do we have you, Brad? All right, let's find Brad again. All right, we're going to call Brad back. He might have fallen asleep. Keith, you do that sometimes during the long break.
Happens to old white men.
Well, he's got a kid. I've got kids. I know how that goes. So we're going to try to call Brad back. Maybe he thought we were only going 30 minutes tonight. Anyway, but we talked about that last week, and he has it posted up there at Occidental Descent. We'll get his take on it when we get him back, or if we get. All right, Brad, there you are. I don't know what happened to you, buddy. I know you're traveling. You're in the car right now. Your Occidental Descent piece, 20% of Americans now think that this whole thing's going to end violently. To me, that's pretty substantial.
Oh, yeah, definitely. How crazy things are getting around.
Well, I can see how they do it. You know, it's like the irresistible force meets the immovable object. Right now, you know, we're the irresistible force, and they are the immovable object.
Okay, I know Brad is in the car right now. He may be traveling through a dead zone. He had a family function at his son's school tonight, and so we will keep trying to reconnect with him, and we'll see how successful we may be. About that, Miss Producer, we'll leave you that in your charge. But another thing I wanted to talk to Brad about tonight was this whole thing about the fact that it was the left themselves who brought Trump back from the abyss. Trump was done. He was defeated, and or maybe not, but whatever the case, he was deposed and he was out of office. And 4 years of Biden, yes, a weak candidate, a terrible economy, but you've got this situation now with all of the stuff going on with these trials.
They couldn't let Trump die because he was just too delicious of a target. He just got their juices flowing.
I want to get back with Brad about that. Brad, I know you're traveling. You may be going through some dead zones. We've lost you a couple of times.
That's what's happened.
And that's okay. That's okay.
It should be fine now. It should be fine now. We'll see.
Not all of Alabama has cell phone service now.
No, well, listen, in the car, we're all at the mercy of our
it is circuit T-Mobile
overlords.
T-Mobile, my band.
Anyway, so Brad, the several things we want to cover with you before the end of the hour.
Okay.
This situation where 20% of Americans think it's all going to end violently, that's, again, pretty substantial to me.
Oh, yeah, I definitely think that is very essential. One interesting twist is what is this with this trend of like leftists catching themselves on fire?
I saw that again. It's not funny.
I know. I mean, that's an interesting.
It reminds me of Vietnam. You know, Buddhist monks doing it.
I saw that yesterday, and this is the second one recently, and I thought, you know, the energy is different than it was in 2020, right? In 2020, they were setting buildings on fire. Now that they're setting themselves on fire, so I think that is significant. I haven't written about that though yet.
Well, you saw that guy. I mean, you had the one last week that was protesting Palestinian genocide in Gaza, and then you had the one just what was it yesterday, 2 days ago, that he was protesting Trump's fascism by killing himself.
Yeah. That's how he's.
Go ahead.
He was saying, like, this is how you start a revolution or something. Like, he was, like, singing. And that was the last thing he posted, and then he lit himself on fire. I saw that last night.
Outside of the courthouse where Trump is being tried. And this whole thing about hush. Well, I'll get to that first. We'll pivot back to this whole thing where now, you know, look, last year you had 47%, according to a Rasmussen poll, 47% of Republicans, I should say, saying that they support a national divorce. Now you've got 20% of all Americans saying that this thing is going to end violently. That's a pretty substantial figure to think that. And but before we pivot back to that, Brad, yeah, let's just go to where we're at now with Trump, because you've written about this. He was in the abyss. He was done. They brought him back. The people just see this for what it is, and it is what it is. It is a naked abuse of power, a naked abuse of lawfare. They can't help themselves. These low IQ, and I love how they position Fani Willis as this, you know, brave, this brave black woman who's going up against the system. She's totally enabled by the system.
Of course,
system.
She's brilliant because she went to Harvard or something. Tisha James or whatnot.
Well, who else? Somebody else went to Harvard.
We
were talking about.
We got people going to Harvard now that couldn't get into Howard a generation ago.
Talking about Sheila Jackson Lee, who went to Yale, and she thought the moon is a gas and not a rock, and we're going to live there, and the sun's almost too hot to colonize.
She skipped the astronomy class, I guess.
But in any event, so we lost Brad again. This is, this is live radio. This is what it is. But Brad's premise at Occidental Descent is Trump is back in a big way, to the point that he is in contention now, if not the front runner, because even the independents see it now that this is what the left's all about.
Well, look, it's there's a connection between this movie and the fact that they brought Trump back from the dead. They think he's the only one that they can hang a revolution on and use that as an excuse to try to go around and slaughter us.
And Brad's back. He's at home now. Brad, we've got a secure connection with you now. So, again, pontificate. Well, not pontificate. That's the pejorative.
Gloviate. Yeah.
No, give us your take. Let's just put it that way. On the fact that the left has given Trump this second life.
I tell you what, I hope that Brad has nine lives, because I think we've gone through eight of them here.
Well, Brad's one of our go-to guys, too. Brad, we have our producer, Liz, is working overtime. She's going to get a bonus check at the end of the night. But we love Brad, and we like to prove that it's live radio. But I think you can carry the load here, Keith, on the fact that, yes, indeed, he is right that the left has given Trump this life. Because,
well, they want it because they think that
it's motivated the base, but it's also motivated people that might have soured on Trump for various reasons, well, including a lot of our people.
Well, it motivates the left because he's the only guy that they hate enough to be able to hang the rap of starting a revolution against. You know, Mitt Romney just won't do for that purpose, and neither will, you know, some of these other George W. Bush, Jeb Bush, people like this. They couldn't inspire anybody to go out and buy a snow cone, you know. And on the other hand, Trump, he fits their, you know, that what central casting wants, some charismatic leader that people follow, you know, and he's going to be the new Robespierre, yeah, or something.
All right, I think we've got Brad back now. So Brad, take it anyway.
That's
why we do Cricket and C Spire up here, whatever we do. But anyway, no, Brad, it's great to have you back. So we got two topics that unfolded since we had that little bit of disconnect. Number one, let's take them one at a time. The 20% of the country is saying in this new PBS poll that it's going to get violent. That's again, I say again, substantial to me.
That's obviously, it's just getting worse and worse as things aren't calming down, and that's the trajectory. And you can imagine what it'll be like if Biden loses, especially with all the agitprop we've talked about earlier.
Well, what do you think?
Hopefully they'll succeed. We'll say don't let the door hit you in the ass when you leave.
That's almost too good to be true. What do you think benefits us more, Brad? Because you see how much the movement has materialized and crystallized since January of 2021 when you had the Biden inauguration. We're better off with Trump losing? You know, I like a dying patient, we all want every last breath is precious, but, and I'm a husband and a father. You've got kids in the nest, as I do. You got one on the way. Keith's got three out of the nest, but, you know, none of us want unrest and instability and violence. But what's better off for us in the long run? To go ahead and have four more years of Trump where, you know, Republicans think, hey, the system works. We elected our guy. Everything's good. Or ahead and get on with it.
That is the same dynamic. I mean, we've been through all this before. We know, like, it's whenever if Trump wins, everybody will go back to sleep and congratulate themselves.
It's like when Trump wins, and we also know what it's like when Trump loses.
I would like to see a vengeful Trump go in and do things differently than the first term, but we have no reason to believe that'll happen. I'm going to vote for him, and I want him to win. But I just think, ultimately, we've progressed a long way in the last 4 years. I think it almost might be better for them to stack the Supreme Court, do what they want to do, drive the whole train into the ditch, and let people know beyond any shadow of doubt there is no reforming of the system, and secession, balkanization is the only option.
The left will be jumping off the cliff like lemmings.
I don't think the left's going to secede or anything like that if Trump wins. But, Brad, what about this thing? The thing going on right now, what the hell is this hush money business? This happens every single
day. Hush money is not against law.
This happens every single day. And, in fact, it happened very recently with Matt Schlapp, who had this homosexual encounter with a Republican operative. And Matt Schlapp allegedly fondled this guy.
And he slapped him.
And then there was a lawsuit, and it was going to go to trial. But then at the last minute, just a few days ago, in fact, Matt Schlapp paid out $400,000. I mean, what's the difference? And you can look it up. Matt Schlapp sexual lawsuit, Carlton Huff.
Well, it's all right with Schlapp because it was a homosexual affair.
Okay, but I'm just saying, what's the difference? People pay people off to avoid going to court all the time. And I don't understand what's any different than this. And I know they're saying there's some differences, but there's really not. I mean, but this whole thing, I mean, it has given Trump second life. Let's quickly close the book on that.
Yeah, I mean, like, we were talking about Matt Schlapp and his, like, you know, being, a, you know, accused of fondling, like, some man.
That's the kind of like, you know, the organized conservative movement. I mean, as we saw like today with the vote on the Israelite. Don't even get me started.
Bill Kristol.
Right. We'd be better off with these people losing. I mean, they're making a strong case for it in the House. Right? Is worthless. I don't even have a congressional district anymore because you remember Brett Kavanaugh erased my congressional district, made it majority
black. Yeah, right.
Elected another
Democrat. One of those great conservatives appointed.
Some great conservative, yeah. You know, even if all things were equal, I think they've actually erased some other congressional districts in Louisiana and Georgia and Alabama. That's like three flips or so right there.
Beautiful losers, Sam Francis.
Beautiful, exactly. Beautiful losers. They've already like sacrificed the House, and that was before they did all this. But if Trump lost and the Republicans lost, it would definitely be the more radicalizing on the right. The question is, the question is the trade-off. Can we absorb another 20 million illegal aliens?
Well, interestingly, I mean, you know, and there is, you know, certainly more evidence to this than there's a pot of black Republicans at the end of the rainbow type of fantasy that the Republicans have.
There are some
Hispanics that are moving to the right just because they don't like black criminality. But anyway,
and sexual perversion.
Well, there are more Hispanics going a Republican than blacks. But I don't know if it's going to be enough to negate the demographic displacement. But again, I had this for you, Brad. And I was going to bring this. I knew you were coming on the show tonight, and I was going to bring this to your attention. And I'll be damned, you're like our own version of Sauron. You see everything. You had it posted to OD before I could even get you on the show. I was going to bring this to your attention to bring a point. And that was Charlie Kirk. Again, we talk about Charlie Kirk. I saw this that he had mentioned that the Civil Rights Act created a beast that turned into an anti-white weapon. Well, of course, Everything about the Civil Rights Act was bad to begin with.
He's coming around, but he's not there yet.
Well, but anyway, but I mean, this just goes to show the growth in the movement of the right is since 2021. Mm-hmm. In 2021, he was kicking people out of his meetings for saying that. Now he's saying it in a very big way, and he's putting out commentaries opposing Martin Luther King Day and all of this. This guy was kicking people out for that. And I don't know if he has changed that much, but he's at least appearing to have changed. And maybe he has. I don't know. But no matter what, we know this. His base has changed, and so here he is now.
Right.
And this is the growth our movement has experienced.
Right, what is Charlie Kirk's sexual preference?
Who knows? But anyway.
I actually think Kirk is married, isn't he?
Hallelujah, I tell you.
Anyway, but Brad, the fact that our movement has progressed a lot mm-hmm. in the last 4 years under Biden, and this is just another example.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the whole Charlie Kirk thing was – you got to remember Charlie Kirk's whole thing, turning point. He's the guy who's talking to the youngest people on the right, the youngest Republicans. And folks like me and you, we're middle-aged now, so there's a whole generation or two below us. How'd that happen? And they're all like extremely radical. And I mean, we've talked about the generation things before, but you know, the older we get, the more radical people younger than us get. And you know, as that changes over time, like you can think 4 or 5 years down the road, who knows where we'll be at. But also the flip side of it is, you got all these people in Congress who like are in their 90s and they're, I mean, did you see the horrible speeches today where they're like, you know, they're Winston Churchill and it's 1938 and it's Munich and Putin is Hitler and is on the verge of like that's the
yeah.
That's
I gotta
the,
say
the
this about yeah. Oh, it's terrible. MAGA Mike Johnson, this cuck. $100 billion on the table for our great allies, Israel and Ukraine, our great leeches, and this whole thing.
So, I have plenty of hope. I have plenty of hope. But then at the same time, I like there's all these people like who their minds are made up about politics and the 60s.
Well,
and
the more things change, the more they stay the same.
I will say this: we are moving in the right direction, but obviously we're not to the terminus yet. We are going in the right direction, but yeah, this stuff is, of course, demoralizing. The stuff in the House, but we where the rubber meets the road and the grassroots is going in the right direction. But this whole thing, I've seen so many talking points from these people, you know, who are obviously controlled by the Israel lobby want to give this next $100 billion to Israel and Ukraine, saying we cannot allow Russia to march through Europe. They loved it when the communist Russia and the Bolshevik Russia, the Jewish Russia, was marching through Europe to kill Germany. They loved Russia marching
allies.
Through Europe then. Yeah, they were our great allies.
Right.
They don't like Russia marching through Europe if they're traditional Christians.
Of course, back then, Russia was run by Jews.
Well, that's the point. They loved it. They didn't have a problem with Russia marching through Europe then. Why do they have a problem with it now? Which now it's not even happening and wouldn't happen. But nevertheless, that's the talking point.
Because Jews aren't running Russia anymore.
Okay, Brad, to you.
Oh, same thing. Also, we've got to talk about the TikTok thing where the Chinese sell like TikTok to some Jewish company so they can censor criticism of Israel.
Make the Jews sell Hollywood.
Yeah, that also happened. There was too much criticism of the ADL on TikTok, and they're mad about that. So.
Whatever happened, what was the final thing? I saw all of that hullabaloo, but has there been a final decision on, I guess TikTok still, my wife still views TikTok here in the United States, so I guess it's still functional.
Yeah. The House passed the thing to force them to sell it today. So that was part of
sell it to a Jew. That's what they.
Exactly, Keith. You absolutely know that's exactly the whole shot. That's the whole idea, right? They got it. The ADL has to control that as well. That's the problem.
Of course, the ADL's taken a beating, as has Israel, in terms of public opinion. And again, you got to get out of this controlled media propaganda bubble here in the United States, and you got to look how the world sees Israel and Jewish power and influence, and even the ADL and Greenblatt.
Unfortunately, we are the big enabler. We're like Frankenstein's monster.
Well, the goal,
and the Israelis are Dr. Frankenstein.
Oh, yeah. I'm kind of surprised that, you know, the attack and stuff. I thought, you know, they really did seem to back down. You know, it was some kind of pathetic little attack on Iran with drones.
And a saving face type of maneuver.
Blown over. Maybe Netanyahu's backing down. Maybe he's scared.
What do you think? Yeah, okay. Give me a minute on that, because we've only got a minute remaining. And what do you see? The rest of the year, Brad, you're a prognosticator of prognosticator, a sage of sages. The rest of the year, man, where are we at in November?
I still think Trump wins at this point. Yeah, I don't see any reason to change my view of that, even though he's going to be convicted in this Alvin Bragg thing.
There are two off-ramps on that. One is a conviction on a felony, and two is an assassination, but...
As far as political theater goes, Trump defying the judge and going off and running his mouth every time he gets out of court, I mean, it's wonderful.
He just can't help himself, but it's great.
Yeah, let him continue to discredit the whole system. That's, you know, he is actually, you know, I mean, as frustrating as he can be at times, he's useful, like, in that respect.
Yes, yeah, but he is. He has done more. I will say this about Trump, and no doubt about it, he has done more to discredit the legitimacy or the perceived legitimacy of the system than any of our people, of our movements. I mean, he elections themselves, courts themselves, maybe is driven entirely out of his own narcissistic whatever, but I don't care. He has done us a huge assist that no other single man could do, and God bless him for that. He has furthered the revolution more than any of our people.
He's the only person in the wide world that could have pulled it off. He's got the chutzpah, as the Jews say. He's got the geld, as the Jews say. He's got the brassiness. He's got the orneriness.
Just going out after court and saying the judge isn't going to let me go to Barron's high school graduation. I mean, it's comedy, it's theater, it's every. But it's
that's why they can't let him die. They've got to keep him going, because I mean, otherwise the news networks just go in their ratings go in the tank.
I don't know how much that is a motivating factor for what they have planned for him, but nevertheless, yeah. I mean, Brad, seconds remain. Would you agree that Trump has furthered the cause more inadvertently, even if inadvertently the music's playing 30 seconds, than we could have done
Absolutely.
In a generation?
Absolutely. He can drive us insane, but at the same time, we're seeing a real benefit from it, in my view.
Absolutely, and we'll continue to see it. Brad, we'll talk to you again soon. Happy Confederate History Month. Go see Civil War if you can stand it. And, or if not, read about it at OccidentalDescent.com. For Brad Griffin, Patrick Martin, Gene
Don't
Andrews.
Give a woman named Dunce any money from this
Keith
thing.
Alexander. I'm James Edwards. One more week in Confederate History Month is next week, and then it's back to business as usual. We love you. God bless you. Godspeed. God save the South. Thank you, Brad. Best to you and Thanks, Renee man. And your growing family. We love y'all. Talk to everybody else next week. Good night.
Good night.